Welcome to the Wealthy Homes Podcast, where we help young Michigan families manage their finances and create wealth. I'm your host, Connor Bowserman, financial advisor with Preferred Financial Group. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Wealthy Homes Podcast. Again, my name is Connor Bowserman, financial advisor with Preferred Financial Group. If you've been following the podcast for a little while now, you know that we do a Q&A every couple of episodes, and the way to submit those questions, you can go into that type form link in either the social media link on my Facebook or LinkedIn, and you can submit these anonymous questions to be answered on the podcast. So that's what we're going to be doing today. And to help me out with that, we have James Gilbert, who's another financial advisor here at PFG. If you wanted to find him or see where he's at most of the time, you could walk into Marshall Community Credit Union and you'll see that him there on the left. But without further ado, thanks, James. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Connor. Love being on the podcast. So thanks for having me on again.
Yeah. So to kind of run back what we do, if you are kind of new to the episode, is basically we've got five questions that were submitted, and I'll just read through the questions and then James and I will kind of give our what I'll call a spitball. It's not a recommendation. You don't take this in and take the investment advice or whatever it is that we're giving as a recommendation. This is just kind of boilerplate, just what we kind of believe based off of the information that you gave us. So
just more of a hot take as opposed to real financial advice.
Yeah. We're not sitting down and like seeing your finances and, and that kind of a thing. So, all right. The first question is, what do you recommend to a couple who is looking at having one stay at home with kids? Would like to stay at home with my kids, but I'm scared about the drop in income and having to say no to things I've come to like and the lifestyle we're currently living. They're between 25 and 29, married, looks like they're salaried employees, make a pretty good income between 95 to 136,000. And then just some extra relevant information they gave was, both me and my husband make good money. We have paid off all of our debt except for his truck. We locked in a good house payment a couple of years ago and have no desire to move anytime soon, although I'd eventually like to move up. I do like what I do for work, but I have a lot of guilt as a mom and feel the need to stay home with my kids. My kids are 18 months and 4. So James, you want to go first on that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I don't know. The biggest thing, I guess, that jumped out to me in the first place, kind of when you're reading that question, Connor, and then kind of the additional information is that you guys have a good foundation because you have no debt except for the truck. So to me, that kind of makes the question a little easier, I guess, of if you can do it. You probably can do it, but you've kind of indicated in the question you're kind of scared to say no to some things that you've come accustomed to and lifestyle that you currently live. And I get that, except my personal opinion on that is just, especially when you have young kids like that, you're never going to regret staying home with your kids, especially because they're only that young for so long. And to me, again, this is just kind of a spitball hot take. You know, the things that you've come accustomed to lifestyle-wise, I mean, those are maybe going out to eat whenever or traveling or doing those types of things. And those are great things. But to me, just having the memory and I guess the motherly joy that you get from staying home with your kids, I think is priceless. So to me, I would say just do it. If you guys can do it, which again, sounds like you can because you have no debt, you make pretty good money, even though you're going to take a drop in income, you probably can do it. So I would say do it and then go from there and see how it works out.
Yeah. So just kind of like a backdrop, both of my wife and James's wives both stay home.
Yes.
And so we are very familiar with this.
Yes.
And it is difficult. I'll say, I mean, just having one income and just the stress of life, especially now with bills seeming like they just never stop and keep increasing. But again, you're not going to regret that decision when it comes to the financial part of it, you know, like us running the numbers. Of course, it's going to hit you when it comes to the finances part. And just knowing that, hey, it might push you back 1 or 2 years in retirement or when you can retire and that type of thing, but it's going to be completely worth it. And then one thing I'll say too is one of your kids is going to be pretty close to school age here pretty soon. The 18 month has got a little while, but you don't have to stay at home forever. I think people like know that you're going to eventually go back to work, especially if you've got a good paying job and and career and education and that kind of thing. So I said, you're fine. The biggest thing is just go through and make a budget and make sure that you've got every expense kind of planned for and that you can physically do it. Don't just think that you can.
Yeah.
Make sure that you can actually do it financially.
Yeah. And actually, you make a good point. It actually forces you to actually become more financially responsible. Mm-hmm. And it makes you have to get a budget and stick to the budget, because now, instead of having a lot of frivolous income that you can spend whatever on, now you don't have that. So now you and your husband really have to work as a team to kind of get the budget and stay on budget. So it actually helps you to become financially more responsible in that aspect. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And then one thing I'll add too is if you can pay down the truck, I don't know how much is left on that debt, but obviously that's income that will kind of go back into your pocket when that's mm-hmm. paid off. So even if that bridges the gap for the next couple of years until you do go back to work, if that's something that you're looking at doing, I think that would be a good move there. All right. Our second question. What is your opinion about the current state of the real estate market? Looking to move to a new home, but hate the idea of a 7% interest rate. They are 30 to 40, divorced, self-employed, make between $44,000 and $65,000, and then kind of some extra info they gave us. They bought a house in 2019. I have a significant amount of equity built up. Was thinking about using some to pay for a down payment and using some to put back into the house to fix it up. What is your opinion on buying below the 20% down payment? I'll kind of give my take first. That's all right. My biggest thing is don't marry the rate, marry the home. And there's going to be some things that are going to change over time. Even the last 5 years of where interest rates have kind of come and gone. I'm not saying we're going to get back to 2-3% interest rates, but there's a chance that it will come down from 7%. There's a chance it goes up from here too. So I would just make sure that you find a house that you can financially take on. Don't have the idea like, hey, if I can just bridge the gap for the next year or two, you know, I'll be fine. Like, hey, know that this could be your mortgage for the next however many years. My opinion when it comes to the 20% down payment, I don't worry too much about in the short term. The biggest thing is just making sure that you're going to pay this mortgage off by the time you do retire. So I don't know your exact age, between 30 and 40. As long as you have this paid off before age 65, that's my biggest thing there. And one thing too, if you do restructure your loan or refinance it, you know, later on down the road, that equity could be built up to where you'll hit that 20% and then you won't have to pay that PMI. So as long as you're pretty good at fixing it up and not one of those people that think they're good at doing it, just making sure that that's a good money spent.
Yeah. No, that's a great answer. I won't take up too much time because I agree with everything you said there. My opinion on just the real estate market in general, if you're looking for the perfect time to buy a house, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. Mm-hmm. Because even if rates go down, like Connor kind of indicated, you still have a lot of people that have your same exact mindset that you're going to wait until interest rates drop and then jump in, which is only going to jack up prices. I mean, the price of the home is still going to increase. So to me, there's really not an optimal time in the foreseen future of when to buy a house. So I think taking the financial, I guess, parts of it out of it, Connor, you hit it right on the head where you said just fall in love with your home, not the actual rates or the price. I mean, those are all obviously important things to consider, but at the end of the day, there's no optimal time really to do that in the near future. So, and again, Connor, you said it with just as long as you can financially do it, especially when it comes to either fixing up your house or the 20%, not doing 20% down, just as long. I mean, obviously, if you don't have 20% down, you're just adding to your monthly price and different, you know, private mortgage insurance and that type of stuff. So just make sure that you can afford it, but there's really not a optimal time. And if you love your house now, hey, there's, I think taking some equity out and fixing it up to make it a longer term stay, you know, I think that's a good option as well.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. If you maybe look at financially, if you made an addition onto the house or fixed up certain parts of your house, would that prolong you staying in that house?
Right.
So maybe an home equity loan or something like that makes a little bit of sense there where, yeah, you're paying more for that home equity loan, but it could be less than if you went out and bought a $100,000 more house,
then
you have an increased interest rate there. Yep. So, all right. So the third question, just got a bump in pay and increased my 401k. My wife and I have kids and bills that never seem to stop coming. I know I need to contribute, but not sure how much or what percentage. I also have no idea what I should be invested in. They're 30 to 40, married, looks like a salary between 65 and 95,000. Then the extra info they gave us was there's two kids, have a good job and benefits. My wife works part-time to have more time with the kids. Do you want to try to tackle that one?
Yeah, absolutely. I always tell people, if you get a pay bump, if you've lived on it without it, so if you can take that and you contribute to your 401k, great. But if you're kind of, I don't want to say struggling to pay bills or it's really, really tight, obviously contributing to your 401k is important, but to take your bump in pay and put it there, it's not the highest of priorities. If you get a pay increase and again, your bills are coming, you're having trouble paying those, I would just say take that pay and just try to pay down your debt as soon as you can. That way you can be comfortable contributing to your 401k. I'll let you answer, Connor, what the exact percentage is, because I know you have some background on that.
Yeah.
So, but what you should be invested in at somebody who's 30 to 40, whatever the most aggressive thing you can be in your 401k, you got plenty of time to still contribute, but plenty of time to see growth in that, even in downturns in the market, which you're going to have in the next, 20, 25 years while you're still working. So it would just be whatever the most aggressive growth style mutual fund, growth style portfolio that you can be invested in your 401k. And yeah, Connor, I'll turn it back over to you for the percentage, because I know you got, like I said, a lot of experience in that one.
Generally, when you're trying to plan for retirement, if you contribute to 10% of your overall pay, and this is usually including some type of match, that will allow you to retire about age 65 if you started at age 25 or around that college age. If you started earlier, then maybe you don't have to do the quite 10%, or you can retire earlier than 65. If you do over and above that 15% plus, that allows you generally to retire before maybe age 60 and potentially in your late 50s. But again, this kind of depends on market cycles and kind of when you get started, what you're invested in. Those are kind of some generalities. So the goal should be at least to get to 10% or above that. So if you're just putting in the match, which is generally what I find when I talk to people who are investing in their 401ks, is to just increase that up to try to get to that 10%, maybe 15% if you can do it. Another thing that you can do if you are allowed to do it in your 401k is they sometimes have what's called an auto increase program, where that will bump you up 1% per year until you get to whatever their maximum is. Generally, it's 10%. Sometimes it's 15%, depending on the plan. So if you were contributing 3% because your match was 3%, then from there, what you can do is it will bump you to 4% next year, and then the following year it will be 5%, and then it will just keep on going. So eventually you'll get to that point that you need to be at, but if you feel like you need more of the income today rather than later, then that's an option for you.
Yeah. I don't want you to max out your 401k and then you're eating macaroni, cheese, and tuna fish every day.
Yeah. That's not an enjoyable way to live life.
No, not at all.
Okay. Now on to one more thing when it comes to just what you want to be invested in. Another option that's generally in those 401ks is some type of target date fund. Generally, this is going to be around the age that you turn 65. So that could be 2040, 2055. And then if you want to be a little bit more aggressive than the standard, let's say you need to catch up because you didn't contribute for the first 10 years you were working, well, then maybe you push that retirement date back a little bit. And that will just allow you to be a little bit more aggressive than the standard person your age. Because it just depends on some of your investment options in those 401ks. Some of them have a lot of different mutual funds or indexes that you can pick from. And some of them have very sparse options and the target date's the only one. So just a little bit of nugget of info there. Going on to the fourth question. How would you or do you handle student loan debt? I have $62,000 in student loan debt. Have three different loan companies with different interest rates. Looking at consolidating and lowering my payment. Struggling to decide if I should really try to pay it off or work towards a house and investments. They're between 18 and 25. They're single, make between $44,000 and $65,000. And then some of the additional information is that they're a single guy and make good money in insurance underwriting with good benefits. Just want to get off to a good start financially and don't know the right first step. Want to try that one?
Sure. Yeah. first thing I would tell you is that, yeah, you got to get rid of that student loan debt. $62,000 and probably just making minimum payments. I mean, I don't, Connor, you can do the math as well as I can. You're probably going to be in your mid-60s by the time you pay that off. So I would, and again, everything's in priority. Obviously, a house is important at some point. Investments are important at some point. But in the in those three things there, the most important thing, in my personal opinion, is to get rid of that student loan debt. So I would work very hard at trying to pay that off as quick as you can. I do know when you consolidate, just depending on, again, your credit and all that stuff is kind of going to depend on what interest rate that you can get. So I would just, I would try just to hammer that down as quickly as you can, because all that's going to do is hinder your house and your investments later on if you don't take care of that now. Yeah. So I just, again, in the ladder of importance, I would say, yeah, let's try to pay that off as quickly as you can. That way it'll make house and investments so much easier for you later once you get that monkey giant gorilla off your, off your back.
Yep. No, I agree with you. Just the way I would go about it, might not be consolidating. Sometimes consolidating does work, probably with current interest rates that might not be beneficial. The best way to do it, and you can do this with a couple of different calculators. Dave Ramsey's got a couple. We've got a free one that we can send you. It's just an Excel spreadsheet. But basically what you can do is just put in those three different loans, and then you can attack it with either the snowball or the avalanche method. And basically what that means is you're just attacking what, in the snowball method, you're attacking the lowest payment first. And then once you've paid that off, then you roll that and snowball it to the next payment and just try to pay that off as soon as possible. The avalanche doesn't necessarily look at the payment, but it looks at the interest rate. So if you've got a 3%, a 5%, and a 6% interest rate on these different companies, you would attack the 6% first. And then once you've paid that off, then you would roll that to the next payment. That's generally the fastest way. But what's been proven is that the snowball method works a little bit better because it keeps you on that path because you feel like you are earning some success. So either one of those is going to get you to your destination quicker. But I would just say that's the way I would tackle it. Usually if they're consolidating it, they're in it to make money. So generally they're going to be charging you a little bit more, even though your payment might be less than those three. So that's just the way I would tackle it. But that's, again, that's some general info. That's not necessarily a recommendation there. All right. Our last question. We're getting married soon. We have started to talk about finances and how we want to handle money, income, and bills. We are both independent and have kept things separate while dating. Wanted to know how you handle or view personal finances for married couples. They are 25 to 29. They are not married yet, obviously. And then salary between 65 and 95. And then some of the info that they gave us was, we feel like we view finances differently. My fiance is more of a spender, and I feel like I'm more frugal and like the ideal of saving / investing. Both have some debt, but it's very manageable between student loan and car loan. One thing I'll say, if you go back into the treasure chest of the Wealthy Homes podcast, you can go all the way back to episode 3, and I kind of talk about my view on this, but I'll kind of reiterate what that episode kind of says is, when you do get married, not only are you becoming one in marriage, but that includes your finances. And I would encourage you to include both of you guys onto one checking account as a joint checking and savings. This allows you guys to both work together towards one common goal or multiple common goals. And so that's where I would view it. I would not do it separately. I know some people, and I guess even my personal situation is a little bit different. Sometimes you have to have your own individual checking and savings. But the way I viewed it and the way I see it is the couples that do it together generally are on a better path when it comes to their financial outlook than the ones that do it separately. And then there's that creates some animosity too. If you've got one spouse that feels like they're getting the burden of the bills and they feel like they're not getting as much of their income to be able to spend, but then the other one feels like they're maybe a little bit more financially free and they can feel free to spend that. So it kind of keeps you guys both in check as a spender. That keeps you in check as your spouse is able to kind of check up on you. And then also you being frugal will allow you to spend some money and enjoy some of the money that you earn today. So I don't know if you want to add to that.
Yeah, no, those are all great things. Obviously, me and Connor are coming from a Christian background. So once you are married, you become one flesh, and that means everything. So that does include your finances. And you kind of said it, Connor. I mean, you guys are a team now. So, and you have to be on the same page as far as everything in your life. That doesn't necessarily mean you got to agree on everything. But if you're on the same team, again, kind of like you said, your fiance is more of a spender and you're more of a saver. So you're going to have to find some common ground on that one. One kind of quick tip I'll give you, just in my own personal life, me and my wife are very similar in that aspect where my wife likes to spend. I'm more of a saver. So how do we combat that, or how do we find common ground? Well, again, if you guys are no longer having her finances and your finances, you guys are one. So it's your combined finances. Now, I think it kind of changes the perspective a little bit. And then two, me and my wife, we have weekly financial meetings. I mean, mm-hmm. every Sunday night, we sit down and say, hey, this is what we did this week. Here's what's coming up. Here's what we got. So let's make it work somehow, some way. And it just seems to get you guys, again, on the same page. You guys start to get in the habit of, yeah, finding common ground and just really working together as a team for shared goals. It's really hard to have common goals and have both of you working independently with your independent finances for the same goal. Because again, you're going to have your own opinion, say, hey, we should be here. She's going to have her own opinion of we should be here. Mm-hmm. And that's not a recipe for sustained success in that. So yeah, I would just say you got to combine them and just keep each other accountable and just make sure that you guys meet regularly on this, just to make sure you're on track and working towards your common goal.
Yeah, I totally agree. So if you have more questions on that, of course, go back to episode 3 of the Wealthy Homes podcast. But that should be it for today. These were great questions, honestly. And these are a lot of questions that a lot of people, I think, are asking themselves or they find themselves in. So thank you guys for submitting those questions. If you are interested in submitting some questions, again, go on to my link tree, which is on my Facebook and LinkedIn. And then it will be that first tab there on that type form. And you can type those in. And again, you remain completely anonymous. There's no email. There's no phone number. I don't know anything about you. This is just strictly for the podcast and answer those questions. So again, thank you for submitting those questions. And thanks, James, for coming on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Again, yeah, those were great questions. They seem to cover a lot of different topics, which was great. Because it's, like you said, it's topics that I'm sure every young person probably wants the answer to, but either they're afraid to ask those questions or they just don't know where to go. So yeah, but it was great. Sure. Thanks for having me again, Connor. I really enjoyed it.
If you want to reach out, again, our number here at the office is 269-978-6000. And then you can find all of our information on our website at preferredfinancialgrouppfg.com. All right, we'll see you guys in the next episode. Thank you for listening to the Wealthy Homes podcast. Be sure to click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Connor Bowserman or Preferred Financial Group. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investment advice. Always seek the advice of Connor Bowserman or other qualified financial advisors with any questions you may have regarding this episode. Connor Bowserman is a licensed financial advisor, and any of the investment advisory services offered are through Harbor Investments, member SPIC. Products and services provided are not NCUA insured, have no credit union guarantee, and may lose value. Consumers Professional Credit Union and Marshall Community Credit Union and Harbor Investments are separate and independent companies, and credit unions are not providing securities services.